Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. I'm delighted to welcome Desi Farrell. He's got a job not too many would be looking for, running for. He is the Chief Executive Officer of the Gaelic Players Association. And, Desi, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Adrian. Thanks a million.
There is, and I think we should start by drawing the distinction between the Gaelic Players Association and the Gaelic Athletic Association. Okay, you take the lead on that one.
Yes, back in 1999, a group of players got together to form the Gaelic Players Association. It primarily came about at the time because players were somewhat disillusioned with the conditions they faced in trying to compete at county level, at the highest level within the game. It happened at a time that the GAA itself was becoming more commercially successful, and yet the conditions that the players faced weren't great in terms of player welfare, insurance, injuries, even mileage, and the very basics were always difficult to attain at that time. So players got together, formed an association. It was met with a degree of hostility initially by the GAA, which was probably always going to be the case, and I think typical of how other players' associations and other sports evolved over the time. So, but thankfully things have moved on, and there's a very good relationship with the GAA in place now.
Yeah. Okay, well, again, I would imagine that that relationship wasn't, it's not peculiar to Ireland. I think it has been, very... There always has been a kind of a strained relationship going back decades, because obviously there is a fear from organizations, particularly, and there's always this distinction between what's professional, what's amateur. How do you take responsibility for those who voluntarily, join the organization? There are players, and then what happens? You know, it's a relatively short period in sports. Nobody looks at that as being, a lifetime job. It's always like, to a great degree anyway, it's considered to be, well, wait a minute now, athletes and those who are in the athletic field, should they have to know when, before they enter the sports, that there's a high risk. There's a risk of getting hurt after, these are action sports and so forth. But they're the reality of that is, and I think many would say, particularly with Gaelic sports, to try to explain to Americans that, that being out in the field with, sticks, as many would refer to playing with sticks, and have no helmets, no coverage, no anything would be foreign to them, in terms of it couldn't get the other side of it.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Adrian. We've brought visitors over to see games from across Europe and even the States who wouldn't be familiar with them, and they're amazed at the spectacle, the passion, the excitement and the skill levels, and it's always a struggle for them to understand how these players are amateur and get up to go to college the following day or get up to go to work. Okay. Or given how things are at the minute back home, unfortunately some may be unemployed, so it's very unique from that perspective. And
and under reality check, again, it's easier to take hurling, the clash of the ash, and two hurling sticks breaking in two. You know, a foot from the head of those. You know, you need to have blinkers on. If you know, for a lot of people, I think that's the epitome. If you could start there and work backwards, it's much easier to, you know, to understand.
Sure, sure. There's a tremendous amount of courage and bravery required to play our games. And the intensity and the physicality of the games has come on enormously in the last two decades or so. But that said, the games have cleaned up a lot as well, and the sort of sporadic violence that you might have seen in the past are relics of bygone days, thankfully.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a big emphasis on safety now within the games. For example, in hurling, every senior player and every juvenile player in the country has to wear a helmet, you know. So that rule was introduced a number of years ago. So a bit like the NFL over here, you know, they're very
right.
conscious of concussion, for example, has been an issue. And similarly, we'd have our own issues back home that we're working hard on.
Right. Now, human nature... And being what we are, and I think we're probably a bit better at it in Ireland, is to see where we can shift blame here. But those that say, well, why don't they get their own insurance? Why don't they, you know, and you have to stop there, because who in the right mind, as an insurance company, would say, all right, you're a nice bunch of fellas, and I tell you what you do, we'll take care of you, and it's not on, you know.
Sure. The GA actually have quite a decent injury scheme in place. They underwrite it themselves, and as far insurance is always a hot topic within in any sports arena, sports field, you know, because it's difficult due to the costs
sure.
and everything else that goes with it. But in Ireland, the GA would be considered to have one of the better schemes. And then the GPA, on top of that, have a scheme which enhances the level of cover for county players. So all told, in comparison to our other colleagues of different sports codes in back home, we're doing quite well on the insurance front.
And we would also have to say that the Gaelic Athletic Association of Ireland is an amazing success, and it wasn't always that way, particularly when it came to finance and finance management and all the rest of it. It was considered to be more a badge of honor than a business, and at the end of the day, it is a business.
Sure, absolutely. And I think when you look back at over the last decade, what's happened in Ireland, the three pillars or the three big institutions, if you like, were politics, the Catholic Church, and the GAA. And the GAA has definitely been considered to be the last man standing. You know, it's gone from strength to strength over the years. And you're quite right, it's run like a business now, it has to be, but it's
right.
it's also a great not-for-profit organisation, in that the vast majority of the money they take in goes back out to the grassroots to provide the coaches to encourage the next generation of youngsters.
I also, not because I came up with this, but I think it has to be accepted that in the absence of Gaelic sports in the United States, the cultural link would have a huge void, it is very helpful, obviously, on issues like we're hopefully, with fingers crossed and touching wood, we'll see a resolution to, but you know, immigrants and lobbying groups, including obviously the Irish Lobby for Immigration Reform, all of that, the influence and the interest, when everything else might be considered as somewhat shaky, that the sports
yes.
are in fact you know, something that's very cohesive and growing, and the interest is there.
Yes, absolutely. And in many ways, sport is a global language, you know. The four corners of the world people are genuinely interested in sport and have a passion for sport, none more so than our own country and our own national games. Like, it resonates the length and breadth of the country. It's absolutely the bedrock of many of the communities back home. And it's interesting, in our work, the Gaelic Players Association have been over working in the US the last 18 months or so, trying to develop a network of supporters, if you like. But in terms of the narrative around culture and heritage in Ireland, we have been surprised and somewhat taken aback that sport, and particularly Gaelic games, because of the tradition and history, sure, and what it's done for the country, isn't more prominent in that particular narrative, you know. And it's something that we've been trying to address in our various discussions with different individuals who may be of influence.
But again, let's place the modernization, the technology, the availability of of live action, of the numerous vehicles of exposure, that we see that a great number of young people have developed, for instance, a huge interest in soccer and in rugby and in everything. You have to know that, and you have to acknowledge that. Isn't there somewhat of a turnaround, or is there? Are there those who, traditionally, you had to kind of choose, if you were a player,
yes,
you had to choose which road you were going down. Mm-hmm. If you had any inkling to play rugby, Sloan, goodbye,
sure,
you're on your own.
Yeah.
Or soccer, and there was tremendous, with reason, I suppose, there was tremendous animosity, and indeed many interpreted it as being, a lack of patriotism,
yes,
to be over there and, what about our own sports, what about the history, what about the culture of our own sports. Reality of the matter is that the, the television, the coverage was, it was available, and perhaps some of that lent its success because there wasn't enough Gaelic sports taking place, whereas it appeared that in the other international sports, nearly every day of the week you could get the variety. Is that true, or...?
Yeah, well, that's always been an issue. We shouldn't kid ourselves, back home, at least, anyway. We're definitely in competition with other codes, but I think sometimes we need to take a step back and look at what's important for society, if we like, And I think it's great to have kids playing sport, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
Now, great if we can, within the GEA, if we can command the lion's share of the interest or the participation rates, that's fantastic. But definitely for the benefit of society, we need to do more in terms of elevating the status of sport, particularly within the education system. And I think all the big organisations have a role to play on that. In terms of our own games and exposure, it's always difficult to compete with the Premiership and rugby over the last decade as well, in terms of the Heineken Cup has taken on an increased profile as well. So that's not going to be easy. We are an indigenous sport, and it's difficult for us to compete in that market. But I think we're doing quite well. There's a lot of live TV coverage of games back home, and we're still the number one in terms of participation rates. It being our national sport as well obviously helps.
Terrific. Now, let's get back to the Gaelic Players Association. Covered like a couple of the negative aspects of it. First of all, the Gaelic Athletics Association itself, with a history of saying, well, these are young people, they're choosing to come in, and besides, they're going to move on, and there'll be another group, and so be it. Mm. you had the competition then, as I say, from other sports. How is it, and this is a fact, it's not wishful thinking, how did the Gaelic Players Association make inroads to, you know, we kind of here might accept that you were protests and, you know, you would have picket lines and you'd lock places down, but the Gaelic Players Association actually managed that very well. I mean, there was nobody else.
Yeah. I think definitely in the earlier days the wagons were circled, if you like, you know, and it was always going to be difficult to take on City Hall, but you know, over time our ambition was always to get to a place where we had every county player in the country was a member of the association. That definitely wasn't the way it was early days. We had maybe 40 lads initially, and then in the next phase we got it up to 120, then it may have went to 500, but now we've every intercounty player in the country, which is over 2,200. So with that weight of numbers, if you like, there was a credibility and a validation then afforded to us, you know, that the GA said, well, we need to sit down and start taking these guys seriously, you know, and you know, slowly but surely we arrived at a place where we're both very comfortable. We now see ourselves working in partnership. I think the GEA see great value in having an independent players association, because in many ways we have a finger on the pulse, you know. These are the guys that are operating at the coalface and they know what's good for the game, and we believe we play a really positive dynamic role within the overall GEA family, and I think that's important. On top of that then, we have the GA provide us with funding to run our programs, because in the early days we didn't, to be honest, Adrian, we didn't really know what we wanted to do ourselves. We knew things needed to change, but some players may have felt that the game should go semi-pro. Others said definitely not, you know. So it took us a while to navigate our way through that, to find out what the best place and the best positioning of the players and the games as from a player's perspective was, and we think we found that now. It's that we're committed to the amateur status of the association, the GA, but we are very keen that players aren't placed at a disadvantage because of their commitment and dedication to the game. So we have various programs set up around education, career development, life coaching, personal development, benevolent fund, insurance, health and wellbeing programs. So they're all really important.
That's a huge, you know, portfolio of services to, you know, to roll in as quickly as they are. You could, that generally takes a lot more years than you have done. You say that the Gaelic Athletic Association are providing, you know, funds to the Gaelic Players Association, which to some might say, you know, you have management, you know, kind of sharing some of the spoils to a group of people who want even more from them. I mean, if you were on the other side of the fence, they'd say, geez, when is this going to, when is this kind of...
Sure.
Where are the goalposts here? Because you have, I mean, established a number of services that to many would seem, well, that's why you take the job in the first place.
Sure.
But you've come a long way. Is there other funding at some kind of support level for the Gaelic Players Association?
Yeah, well, the GA provide core funding. We reached an agreement with them back in 2010 for a five-year period. So that core funding is very helpful, but unfortunately, because of the length and breadth of the programs we provide and the demand for players to access those programs, there's a shortfall there. Sponsorship back home helps with some of that, but the sponsorship market is quite depressed because of the economic situation.
Yeah.
And fundraising is another element, and we've gone about that in the last 18 months or so, and to be honest, Adrian. We've been overwhelmed with the support from the US, you know. I think people like the story we have to tell. We're supporting amateur players who are so committed to the games, and in their own rights, they're excellent role models in communities and society back home. And right. I think
The reality of the matter is that it's no longer a secret that not only has, you know, the collapse of the Celtic Tiger, but also that the immigration level that we're looking at, I mean, when you have 300,000, people leaving Ireland in 1 year to go elsewhere, that's hardly... and that's a reality that hopefully, that will be changed, and it'll be changed very soon. But that has to have an impact also on sports and on the funding that you're talking about.
Absolutely, and it had a big impact on the GAA, particularly at club level. We thought it would have more significant impact at the county level as well, but I think because of the programs that we have in place, we're in a position to support players who may be unemployed, try to find them a job or provide the upskilling and training required. For some guys, it's maybe go back to education who've never been to third level education before.
Right.
There's an opportunity now there to do that, and we help them with that journey. So in many ways, the programs we have in place are, we believe, at least making a real and significant difference to the lives of these players, which is great.
In the midst of all of this, and with all of the pressures from home, I think that to have the Gaelic Players Association, to have so many respond to Hurricane Sandy, and in particular to come en masse to Breezy Point and to the Rockways and to areas like that to say, we're here, tell us what we can do. And in many cases, you come in and you didn't have, you didn't wait for anybody to tell you what to do in the first place. This was not a public relations exercise. This was something, you know, where you have a very athletic group of people coming and say, look, we're here and we're doing it.
Sure.
And one would imagine that in a place where, as devastated as Breezy Point, that as, you know, as the Gaelic expression is, that's kind of obronashka, that it is, a lot of work for nothing because you can't put a dent into something else like that.
Sure.
What you've accomplished there, and it was a great focus, was Breezy wound up without a sports centre, without a field. Explain that one to us.
Yeah, well, I suppose it came about, Adrian, last November. We ran our first ever fundraising event, the Gaelic Players Association, in New York, and we had the All-Stars over as well,
right,
who played a game in Gaelic Park to coincide with that event. And it was 2 weeks after the storm, and we just thought that it would be a nice thing to do. To be honest, we weren't even sure how it would be received, so we made some approaches to people to see would there be interest maybe in a visit or a delegation of players from back home with the Sam Maguire Cup. So a small group of us went down, and you know, it's difficult to describe the experience we had, because we'd seen it on the TV and heard a lot about it and read it in the newspapers, but actually to go down and witness it firsthand had quite a profound effect. And coming back home, back into Manhattan on the bus, the coach ride back in, it was a fairly somber occasion, you know. So at that point we decided, because we almost felt so inadequate, having gone out there and visited and not been able to do anything, wouldn't it be nice to be able to come back and help in some small way? So that idea sort of gathered momentum, and a group of about 20 of us came back in January to do some work in terms of reconstruction, and particularly around the CYO program and the sports program, because that's probably the last thing that will be replaced or put in place.
And on a priority list.
Yeah, exactly.
Very hard. But anyway, the miracle has occurred, and there is a ball field. I mean, and there is Gaelic Sports Day coming up. But to the image that we have of Breezy is and Breezy Point is that it's bombed out air. Nothing is happening, and it couldn't, and the rebuilding of Breezy is, phenomenal. It's very difficult to even imagine what it is going to be like. You're coming back, and the date is Saturday, June 8th. Now, how is this going to work out? Are you taking both? Are you taking teams from Ireland? Are there teams here that you'll be playing against?
I suppose even to take it a step back from where it's at the minute, there was such a good reaction to the work we did in January with the group of tradesmen and players that, the story just ran and ran. President Obama mentioned it in his St. Patrick's Day speech,
sure,
which was amazing, and NBC News covered the story as well. So, and I think that the people, the community in Breezy, were obviously taken by that level of recognition of the problems they face and they encounter. So we just thought it'd be nice to follow up in some small way, maybe do something different, and again with the focus being on getting the CYO sports program up and running, we decided that it would be a good idea to run a Gaelic Sports Day and perhaps some competitions for more experienced players and for those who are complete novices. We've two different competitions, so we cater for everyone, and it's just generally to have a fun day out there, community, maybe get involved and, have barbecue music, entertainment, and try and lift the morale and the spirit in the place, because things are quite difficult. But they're very resilient people, and I know they're looking forward to this particular event on June the 8th, and we're hoping that the corporate world in Manhattan may support and enter teams into the competition and use it as a team-building exercise for their own companies as well.
And you have, in addition to the large corporates, you have a great pool in terms of business owners, pubs, restaurants, a great number of people who want to be involved.
Exactly.
We mentioned Breezy, and Breezy is a great place to, in fact, pinpoint and to focus on, because when you have an area like Breezy with 2,400 of 2,800 homes that are still unoccupied for varied reasons, many of them just burned out altogether. That does not mean that right in the backyard, for instance, a huge, massive number of people in Rockaway, which is actually only walk away.
Yes.
That it's not just, this is not just singling out Breezy, as it were. This is going to be something that is going to be of tremendous value to people, particularly those in many of the ravaged areas that got never made the television, never got any kind of the forgotten.
Absolutely.
And I think this is a kind of a way to say, hey, come on, we do know you're there, and it's obviously it's a great lift. It's more than games. It's a festival. It's a festival atmosphere.
Exactly. And we're hoping that it's going to kickstart the summer for that whole community, and that everyone out there will get involved and come back, even if they're not located there at the moment, that they'll come back and spend a day there and meet some of their old friends, and particularly for the kids, because they've been scattered to the four corners, and it's quite difficult for them, having lost their friends and that. So we're hoping it'll be a great success. We're delighted to help in some small way. We're bringing out a good group of players to do some legendary names, to do some coaching and help facilitate the whole day. So we're really looking forward to it.
A very good point that you've made there. There are a lot of those young people in particular, who overnight, not only did they not have a home, but their relocation in many cases was out to New Jersey to places, and they haven't been back to their local areas because there's nothing to come back to. This is a great gathering. It's a great,
Absolutely. And the Manhattan Gales, the new GA club formed in town here, are rowing in on the day as well, and going to lend their support. And there's some great people out there already. Tim Devlin has been phenomenal and has helped us in terms of facilitating our involvement and our support for the community. So it's, we look forward to it. If we could mention the website address maybe for anyone interested in supporting this particular initiative.
We're keeping best wine of the last.
Yes.
Of course.
Very good. Very good.
Of course. Go ahead.
www.gpa.splashdat.com. So that's www.gpa.splashdat.com.
Okay, and for those like myself who could easily get that wrong, even on the 10th time, you have a website that if you put in GaelicPlayers.com.
GaelicPlayers.com will bring it up as well.
Okay, that's GAELIC Players, all one word, .com. And let the word get out.
Absolutely, yeah. It should be, and we're hoping that people who've never played the game might come along, find out some more about it, the history and tradition, and then try it out and witness it for real themselves.
Right. It's the whole day.
It's the whole day.
Again, friends, it is June 8th. It is taking place at what is generally referred to down there as the ball field, which indeed the Gaelic Players Association members themselves came over and rolled up the sleeves and took the shovels and actually worked towards refurbishing the place. You'll be very welcome back, and it's great, and we're delighted.
Thanks for your support, Adrian, with that as well. Thank you very much indeed.
Friends, our guest, Desi Farrell, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Gaelic Players Association, again, GaelicPlayers.com, email info@GaelicPlayers.com, and you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.